send someone an email containing a Java applet. What does the applet look like? Well, it doesn't have to look like anything, right? It can just be a 1 pixel by 1 pixel applet that is white on the white background so the person can't even see it. Or it doesn't have to be a visible applet. Okay? So the obviously, the user receives your email. They receive the applet. And the applet starts running. And what does the applet do? Well, it turns out that applets have a method available to them that can actually load our HTML documents into a specific frame of the frame set. I think it's called set applet context or something like that. So the applet itself has the ability to load an arbitrary HTML document into a different frame. Okay. So, what does the applet do? Well, it loads a... Now, for those of you that are familiar with webmail service, you'll know that it's a framed environment, right? On the left-hand frame, you have your control panel, right? That's like, you know, compose new mail, check mail, whatever, all these options. And the right-hand frame, you actually have the email messages themselves. Right. So what does the applet do? Well, the applet goes into the left-hand frame, the frame that contains all the control pad for the mail service, and it replaces it with the bad guy's own HTML document, which, lo and behold, is an exact duplicate of the control panel. Okay? But of course, it's been engineered to do something slightly different. This new control panel is engineered so that every single link on the control panel basically is a link to load, guess what, a timeout message into the right-hand frame. Again, from the bad guy's own mail server, right? Obviously, that page is totally under the control of the bad guy, and whenever the user enters their own re-login information, it's sent right back to the bad guy. Now, it turns out you can also do the exact same thing with Shockwave. Now, the interesting thing here is that in the eyes of the browser itself, no security violation is going on with JavaScript, right? Because where is the JavaScript? The JavaScript is in an HTML document that's actually being served out from the web service itself. As far as the browser is concerned, that JavaScript is Hotmail's JavaScript. It has free reign to go into any frame, change whatever it likes, alter the forms, right? And why? All because the webmail services allow people to post up their own JavaScript, which then gets incorporated into their own page. See, that's the problem. Once that JavaScript is incorporated into their page, it has free reign. Okay. Web-based auctions, same general idea. We posted an online working demo of JavaScript exploit that stole usernames and passwords of eBay users. And also interestingly, it could be extended to replicate itself by inserting itself into people's own auctions. And this was coined the Ebayla virus, and it got a little bit of media attention. That was a pretty funny name, I thought. Ebayla, Ebola, get it? Anyway. Okay, so what is the exploit? In this twist, you post an item up for auction at eBay, and I don't know how many people here have actually been to eBay, right? So you know that when you post an item at eBay, right, all the items have associated descriptions. And when you go to post your own item up, there's a place where you can type in your own description of what the item is going to be, right? And eBay has decided to let you use any sort of HTML tags you want in your description of the item that you want to sell. Uh-oh. So, in your description, you type out your script tags, insert some JavaScript, and what does this JavaScript do? Well, let's talk a little bit about eBay. It turns out that when another person comes, right, to view your item that's up for auction, what does that look like on the screen? Well, there's a description of the item, right? And right underneath the description of the item is, oh, a form, so that if you want to bid on the item, you can enter your username, password to make your bid, right? So basically, the description of the item is on the exact same page as the form where you enter your username and password. Uh-oh, right? That's bad. Because, as we all know, the item description contains JavaScript. What does the JavaScript do? Well, the JavaScript will immediately start playing around with the form, Okay? And there's a whole bunch of things that it can do. It can suddenly say, well, yes, thank you for typing in your username and password, but I don't think we'll be sending that to eBay right away. First, let's send that off to Mr. Bad Guy and on a server-side mailing program that does a redirect to a normal, back to the normal eBay follow-up page, right? So from the point of view of the user, what's happened? They've seen an item description. They placed a bid on it. Next page, they're told that their bid was registered. Great, right? From their point of view, nothing unusual has happened. Okay, so what are the implications of, in this case, with this web application, what are the implications of stealing the usernames and passwords? Well, in this case, you can use them to create new auctions. And what does that do? That actually automatically charges the victim's account, right? So suddenly we're not just dealing with email, we're dealing with real money. You can place bids in the victim's name. You can retract legitimate bids in the victim's name. You can change the victim's username and password. You can prematurely close an auction. And also, eBay has some really great, powerful server-side programs that allow you to change the description of your own item even after it's gone up for bid. How do you do that? By entering your username and password. So if I know your username and password, if I've stolen your username and password, and it turns out that you yourself are an eBay user that is running an auction, well, now I can go into your auction, post my eBayla code into your auction, right? That can actually be done automatically, so that in effect what you have is a virus that is spreading from auction item to auction item. Okay? Somebody goes to the auction, they place a bid. If they themselves are running an auction, bang, suddenly the code is in their auction item description. Now that was never actually, I never wrote the self-replicating kind, although it would have been trivial to extend it. And eBay eventually patched the problem after 2.5 months. Okay, so that's the bad news. What's the good news? Is there a way that designers can take advantage of this information to improve their site? Yes, there is. Okay, if you're running a kind of a web service where users must be allowed to post their own HTML content to public areas, okay, especially to public areas that contain forms, right, then you should take the following steps. One, filter the content for client-side processes / tags, right? So try, you know, it's hard, but at least make the attempt to filter out script tags, applet tags, Shockwave, Flash, things like that, okay? And when the time does come for you to write your filtering software, a common mistake that I see is that the programs are written from the perspective of filtering in, or from filtering out instead of filtering in. What's the difference between filtering out and filtering in? Well, it's the difference between starting from the premise that you're going to let everything in, except for that, 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 and that, as opposed to saying, I'm not letting anything in, except that, 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 that. The latter is what you want. You want to start with the premise, I'm not letting anything in. Well, okay, maybe some plain text. Okay, maybe hyperlinks. Maybe this and maybe that, right? So be choosy about what you let in. Don't try and figure out everything that you want to filter out because, you know, there are a lot of sneaky ways to embed JavaScript and client-side processes into a web page, and there's no way you're going to be able to keep up with the technology, the evolution of the technology. It's much harder to try and keep up with all the latest tags and all the different ways to embed it in the HTML than it is to just say, well, I'm not letting anything in except you, you, and you. Okay? And one of the reasons that it's really hard to filter out this client-side technology is because you can write a filter. Sure, it's easy to write a filter that'll go in and, you know, filter out all the script tags and stuff. But, you know, to do that, your program is going to have to be looking for certain tokens, right? It's going to have to be looking for HTML tags that have a certain structure. But browsers are so flexible. It turns out that even if you do type in a tag, and let's say you leave out the closing bracket, well, the filter won't pick it up because it's not a well-formed HTML tag, right? But the browser will figure out what the person's trying to do. Okay? So it's just really hard. Don't even try to pick out what you want to filter out. I strongly recommend filtering in instead. Okay, also if you really must allow your users to post JavaScript information, to post their own JavaScript content, display it in its own browser window, and you can use your own JavaScript to make sure that that new window does not contain a reference to its parent window. Okay, that way any JavaScript that's posted by a user will not be able to make a reference to the parent and will not be able to go and start playing around with anything other than the window in which it is displayed. And obviously you should never place a form on the same page or a follow-up page from all unfiltered content. So those are just some tips. Hopefully it'll propagate its way back to the designers of web applications. It's like I say, it would be great if this information was used to maybe shift, at least in some cases, you know, it's great to have excellent network security. It's really great to have great network administrators and have a totally secure network environment. But hey, if your web application itself is insecure, you're spending a lot of money to protect stuff behind a firewall that can be accessed in a few lines of JavaScript, right? So what are the priorities? Okay, I'll take some questions now, and unfortunately I have to leave in half an hour and go back to Canada, but I'll be out by the pool for about half an hour if anybody wants to talk to me before I leave, and I'll take some questions now. Blue.
If you have a shop that has, say, Netscape mail or Word document outlook, just turning off the JavaScript so that it doesn't do that in mail.
Well, when I say the web, I'm talking about webmail applications, right? So I'm talking about things like Hotmail and stuff like that. Now, there is also some ability to tinker around with things like Outlook and stuff. If you can shut off JavaScript, I mean, if you're paranoid, yeah, turn off JavaScript, but JavaScript isn't your only problem, right?
Yeah.
If you look at the HTML posting capability that they're
The capabilities of what? Sorry?
Third voice?
No, I haven't heard a third voice. Sorry. Any other questions? Yeah? Could you either say that louder, or could someone in the front repeat that so I could hear the question? Right. Yeah. There have been a lot of there's sort of been a stream of holes that have allowed you to do things like that. And yeah, sure. Another approach is to look into your cache and stuff like that, and mail that back. Usually the most, for the purpose of our demonstrations, you know, it seemed that the way to catch people's attention that there's a security problem is to just steal the usernames and passwords, because that, the goal is to get the media's attention and to create a solution to the problem. So you have to do something that people can identify with, right? Everybody knows what it means to steal a username and password. But yeah, obviously, you know, this isn't the only thing you can do. You can use this. You, if you're a designer of a web application, you want to patch this, because, you know, I'm sure there are much more creative ways to do bad stuff than I've been able to show up on with my overhead. Yeah.
Can you find such scripting vulnerabilities for taking advantage of things like cookies and application mechanisms in the browser?
Yeah. Well, cookies are just another technology at the disposal of someone that's doing client-side scripting. So it's just a facet, something that you can take advantage of if you want to, you know, if you do suck some information out of somewhere, you may want to store it in a cookie for whatever reason. Yeah.
Use it to revisit a website for most information.
Cookies in and of themselves are not inherently dangerous. They're just a tool. There's nothing particularly inherently dangerous about a cookie. Okay, I guess I'm running out of time, so thanks a lot.